Good morning. We have several exciting Halloween events coming up. Please consider joining our staff for Heartland's Business Trick or Treat on October 26th at 6 p.m. The LCUUC table will be in its normal spot outside Clink's Carpeting, and we will be handing out candy and singing pumpkin carols. Costumes are encouraged. We are asking for donations of candy for the trick-or-treat, and if you want to donate, please bring the candy here to LCUUC anytime between today and 5 p.m. Tuesday, October 24th. And then on October 29th, all children, youth, and any adventuresome adults are encouraged to wear their Halloween costumes to the service. Immediately after the service, we'll be doing trunk-or-treat, allowing the children to trick-to-treat around the parking circle here while our adults sit by their cars and hand out candy that they have brought. Please consider buying a bag of candy, bringing a folding chair or two, and participating in trunk-or-treat. The Time, Talent, and Treasure auction begins today. You may bid anytime you're at church over the next 2 weeks. Today and next week, there will also be a raffle. Today's raffle will be for a pound of Jim Hansen's roasted coffee beans and a homemade pie made by Mike Barra. Tickets are for sale in the social hall, and the winner will be announced at 11:45. There are 50 more items and events that will be available at the live auction on Saturday, November 4th. Bring your family and friends. Let's make this our biggest fundraiser of the year yet. A list of all the items available at both the silent and live auction were emailed out this week. There are a few copies available to look at while you're at the church. The dates of all the events are also listed in the social hall. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming LCUUC activities and events, and everyone is welcome to attend. LCUUC is a UUA-affirmed welcoming congregation, and we are open to all people, regardless of whom they love and or what pronouns they use. Come and explore what community can mean for you. Please take a moment at this point to silence all electronics you may have here with you today. Thank you.
Thank you.
We light our chalice to remind us that we go forward together. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn, number 114, Forward Through the Ages.
In the houses of the holy, the world pauses. In the hearts of the holy, love abides. In the havens of the holy, hope comforts. In the hearths of the holy, the spirit refreshes. Come then, one and all, and gather in. Come then, one and all, and gather here. Bring here all of your heart. Bring here all of your body. Bring here all of your soul. Bring it here with us. Come, bring the broken. Bring the vulnerable and the ragged. Bring the outcast and the other. Bring the popular. Bring the happy. Bring whoever you are. Come, gather in. Come. Come, one and all, gather in. Come, yet again, come. Please take just a moment to say hi or to introduce yourself to the people around you on this beautiful rainy morning.
Yes.
Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Lois Romikas, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. As I thought about today's service and about saints and sinners and the boundaries of our UU hospitality and belief, I thought about my own dissonance with some of my loved ones and their beliefs. And a quote from this month's Touchstones Journal that was sent out to us about hospitality, and this quote came from Rumi, struck me as appropriate as I was trying to deal with my own issues with my friends' beliefs. This human being is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes, an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. And so with that, welcome. Whether you're with us for the day or here for the lifetime, we are glad you have chosen to join us for worship, community, and celebration. One of the ways we are a shelter for one another is by contributing to local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. If you have any food items to share, please bring them forward at this point in the service or ask a child to bring them forward for you. And I invite all the children to come up, to stay up front here and enjoy a story. Well, today's story is called No Jumping on the Bed by Ted Arnold. How many of you like to jump on your bed? Yeah. Yeah, we all do. In his bedroom, near the top floor of a large apartment building, Walter was getting ready for his bed. But before turning out the light, his father came in and said, "If I've told you once, I've told you a million times, no jumping on the bed. Now, lie down and go to sleep." "Oh, just one more time," said Walter. But he plopped down his pillow and squeezed it tight and slept. "Good night," said his dad, and turned off the light and almost closed the door. And then the room was dark and quiet, except for a soft thump, thump, thump from Delbert upstairs. And Walter thought, if Delbert can do it, so can I. So he turned on the light, and he started hopping up and down on his bed, and soon he got so high that he touched the ceiling. But when he came back down, his mattress creaked, the floor cracked, and the whole bed came cascading through the floor. Now, it happened that Walter's bedroom was directly above Miss Hattie's dining room, and he ended up in her plate of spaghetti. I was not expecting company for today. But down and down they went. Pretty soon, down and down, Walter, Miss Hattie, the plate of spaghetti, the bed and all, through the floor. And Miss Hattie's dining room was above Mr. Maddie's TV room. And he didn't even notice a bed falling through because he was watching TV. Until all of a sudden, a meatball bounced off his head, and Miss Hattie ended up in his lap, and Walter ended up in his aquarium. Pretty silly. But the bed was so heavy at this point, down and down fell Walter, Miss Hattie, Mr. Maddie, the TV, the spaghetti, the bed, and all. And Walter's Aunt Batty was below Mr. Maddie, and she was just moving in. And here they all came down, tumbling through the ceiling, and Walter ended up in her box of stamps. "I see you started a stamp collection," Miss Aunt Batty said to Walter, and falling through the floor, down and down went Walter, Miss Hattie, Mr. Maddie, Aunt Batty, the stamp collection, the TV, the spaghetti, the bed, and all. Pretty silly. And right below that, Patty and Natty were building a beautiful dream house with blocks, and they had chased Fatty Cat out of the room. But down and down came Walter, and he said, "Excuse me," this time, as he broke through the ceiling and burst through the blocks. And down then fell Walter, Miss Hattie, Mr. Maddie, Aunt Batty, Patty, Natty, Fatty Cat, the stamps, the TV, the spaghetti, the bed, and all. And the next thing they knew, Mr. Hanratty, who was painting, suddenly ended up with some visitors. And he said, "I wasn't expecting anybody to check out my painting." But they never paused 1 minute to admire Mr. Hanratty's artwork. They were too busy splashing in the cans of paint and falling through the floor. Down and down went Walter, Miss Hattie, Mr. Matty, Aunt Batty, Patty, Natty, Fatty Cat, and Mr. Hanratty. 17 cans of paint, the stamps, the TV, the spaghetti, the bed, and all. And next, Mr. Farland Getty and his string quartet were astonished by the colorful crowd that fell through the ceiling. The maestro loved an audience, and if they had dropped in unannounced, but he wasn't happy with the paint everywhere. But the next thing you know what happened. They all fell through. And Mr. Ferlinghetti's practice room floor was nicely above the basement ceiling. It was dark as midnight down there. And Walter squeezed his eyes closed and tumbled through the darkness, and he landed on something soft. And when he opened his eyes, everything was in its place. That was all a dream. And Walter could hear his mother and father through the talking quietly, and he said to himself, "No more jumping on the bed." And he laid back down to sleep. But then, just then, he suddenly heard a crack, and the ceiling cracked, and down came Delbert. Down and down came Delbert, bed and all. So that's today's story.
Thank you all for listening to the story. And can I have our lantern bearer come up? Whichever one. There you go. And if the rest of you would help me sing the children to the classroom, may the light and love of our chalice lead you all today and every day. The song is called "For You Shall Go Out," and the words are in your order of service. Look down at your hands. They've been through a lot, those hands. They have strength, weakness, scars, beauty. I invite you to remember that your hands have done the work of love in the world. Your hands may hold one another's hands. Your hands may type emails to politicians. Sign cards of consolation and congratulation. Your hands may patiently teach, quilt works of beauty, write words urging peace. Your hands may bathe children, feed the elderly, nurse the ill, work the earth, organize community. Your hands clasp in prayer, open in release, grasp in solidarity, clench in righteous anger, relax in meditation. Your hands are divine hands. Your hands, our hands, a great mystery of flesh and intention, a great potential of embodied love. Those are the words of Reverend Christine Robinson. It's the work of your hands, those hands that she looked at so closely, and your love which let us make this church possible. And it's the generosity of your giving which lets us share that love a little more widely. Please join us now in our weekly giving ritual This ritual is not about making a profit. Most of us pledge online. It reminds us instead of the value of giving. So reach into your pocket or your bag and give just a little just to participate. A few pennies are enough, though you can certainly give more, and it would be welcomed and used. The morning offering will now be given and gratefully received. Thank you all so much for everything that you do and for these gifts given and received for the life and the work of this community. We are all fellow travelers here on a journey to parts unknown. And we are here in part to bear witness to one another, to be present for one another. And to hold one another in the moments of our lives where our journey may take a turn for the best or the absolute worst. We are a community of human hands and human hearts, and this is the time every week where we come together to witness one another and to minister to one another, and we speak about the good and the bad happening to us and to the world. Before the service, you can always silently light a candle over here on the candle table. But during the service, we speak aloud and we light our candles together. So if you would like to share a joy or need to have us be with you in holding a concern, please raise your hand and one of the ushers will bring you a microphone.
This is Carrie. I'd like to light a candle of joy for the life of my mother, Joanne McGovern, who passed away peacefully about a week and a half ago, and whose life was really full of love and giving and service, and also a candle of appreciation for the people in this congregation who hold me tight during this time.
Hi, this is Scott, and a candle of joy, please. How great to see Doug here leading the choir. And what a fantastic job on that last song. We will be a shelter for each other. I thought the choir did a fantastic job on that song.
This is Barbara, and I have a candle of joy. This weekend, I became aware of how close my two children's families has gotten. And it's something, you know, I didn't have that with my brother and sister. And I'm so glad that that happened here. Thank you.
I'd like to light two candles, one of deep joy that my dear friend, the Reverend Marlene Walker, is home from the hospital and feeling much better. She was exposed to a superbug in Europe. And a candle of both joy and sadness that Denny Davidoff, who has been a bastion of light and strength for the Unitarian Universalist Association, for women in our association, for people of Jewish origin in our association. Denny has been moved to home hospice. She is going to die probably today or tomorrow. And so hold her in your hearts. It is at the request of the UUA. We are lighting candles for her across the country today for all that she has done for our movement.
My name is Jessie, and could you please light a candle of joy for my teenager, Jackson, who turned 13 last weekend, and for the love and support this community has shown us through difficult times and joyous ones alike. Means so much.
Any other?
Hi, it's Chris. A lot of candles of joy today. That's good for a rainy day. I have another candle of joy for a conversation I had with my daughter this week. Some of you know she started at a new middle school at Longfellow Middle School, and she came home and talked about a really good conversation they had in their social studies class with kids that were African American and Caucasian, and the difficulties that they all struggle with. And I was really impressed that middle schoolers could come together and to talk about these things a lot better than adults can.
We light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those sorrows that we hold very deeply in our hearts, but which we've not been able to speak aloud here today.
This morning's first reading, Sophia's Guest by Becky Brooks, I'll be needing some volunteers, a little additional help, and so I need four people to come up and read some parts with me. So could I have hands raised for four brave volunteers out there? So just raise up your hand if you're willing to speak. There's one. Come on down. We got two more over there. Come on down. One more. Great, Gus. Thank you. So you're number one. You're number one. Reader one, we'll get in order here. Make it easy. Reader two, just stay right there. Reader two, Gus, you'll be... I suppose that would be nice. Yeah. Yeah. And Gus, if you can be reader four. So as you see, I start out, and then reader one, reader two, reader three, reader four. So just come on in when you're ready. In fact, I'll stand over here so it can kind of signal. Once upon a time, there was a teacher named Sophia. Sophia had been a teacher in the town where she lived for so long that the kids she had taught in her first class grew up and had kids of their own and sent them to her class too. Nearly everyone in town knew Sophia and loved her because not only was she an excellent teacher, but she was also very kind.
One day when Sophia got to work, she found a note on her desk. The note read, "Dear Sophia, I will be around tomorrow. I wonder if I might stop by your house for tea tomorrow afternoon. Your friend, God."
first, Sophia thought this was a joke. But the more she thought about it, the more she realized if it was a joke, it wasn't a very funny joke. And she couldn't think of anyone who would play a joke like on her like that. Then she thought, oh, what if it isn't a joke? What if God was really coming to her house tomorrow afternoon? And Sophie thought she should get ready, just in case.
On her way home from work, she stopped by the store and bought one of those mats people put in front on their front porches that says in big letters, "Welcome." When she got home, she cleaned her house from top to bottom. She brought in fresh flowers from the garden and put them in a vase in the living room. She cleaned and cleaned until everything was sparkly.
In the morning, Sophia realized she didn't know what God liked to eat. So she baked bread and made a casserole and a salad and baked some cookies too. And what about tea? Does God like hot tea or iced tea? She thought, maybe I better make both. And what if God's favorite thing in the whole world was lemonade? She thought she better make some of that too. And she was so nervous. She didn't know what to expect.
Just then, there was a knock at the door. Sophia's heart went pat, pat, pat. She took a big breath, opened the door slowly, and on the other side was the mayor of the town. "Hello, Sophia. I was walking by and smelled the delicious, fresh baked bread." Sophia said, "I'm so glad you're here. Come in, come in. I'm expecting a very important visitor whom you might want to meet. Please come in and make yourself at home." Sophia and the mayor sat having a nice discussion when there was a knock at the door. Sophia's heart went pat, pat, pat. She took a deep breath, opened the door slowly, and on the other side was a group of children from her class.
"Hello, Miss Sophia. We were walking by and noticed the smell of fresh baked cookies," Sophia said. "I'm so glad you're here. Come in, come in. I'm expecting a very important visitor who you might want to meet. Please come in and help yourself to some cookies." The children were giving the mayor some much-needed advice when there was a knock at the door. Sophia's heart went pat, pat, pat. Deep breath, open door. It was the entire women's covenant group from the church.
"Hello, Sophia. We heard the tea kettle and laughter and thought you might be having a party." Sophia said, "I'm so glad you're here. Come in, come in. I am expecting a very important visitor who you might want to meet. Please come in and make yourself at home." All afternoon, people stopped by Sophia's house, lured by the yummy smells and happy sounds. The townspeople filled their house upstairs, downstairs, and overflowed into the backyard and the front yard. As they got hungry, they made their dinner together and ate as the sun set and the moon rose.
It was a great party. People were playing games and telling stories and baking and playing music and talking together. Sophia had such a nice time that she completely forgot about her very important guest. Even as she waved goodbye from her friends at the end of the night, she felt only contentment at having such a lovely party.
In the morning, though, Sophia woke up and remembered everything. She was confused. Whatever had happened to God? All during her walk to work, she tried to figure out what had happened. Along the way, she smiled and waved to the people she ran into who had been at her party. She thought to herself that she really should do that again sometime.
When Sophia arrived at work, she was surprised to find another note on her desk. It read, "Dear Sophia, I had such a wonderful time yesterday. The bread was delicious. The cookies were divine. Tea mixed with lemonade is my very favorite. Thank you for being such a wonderful host. I hope we can do it again soon. Love, God."
Here ends the first reading. My thanks to all the readers. Thanks.
Blessed are we who gather with open hearts together in this space today. Blessed are we, the chalice lighters of resistance, of justice, of love, of faith. Blessed are we, the heretics, the outcasts, the incasts, the walkers of our own way, the roller skaters, the fallers. Blessed are we, the border crossers, the refugees, the immigrants, the poor, the rich, the wanderers who are not lost, the lost who are afraid to wander. Blessed are we, the transgressors, the trespassers, the passers-by, the ignorers, the cause-takers, the defiant, the compliant, the good, the bad, and everything in between. Blessed are we, the hand extenders, the sign makers, the protesters, the protectors, the protected, the grieving, the dancing. Blessed are we, the cisgender, the trans woman, the trans man, the non-binary, the multigender, the no gender, the flat out confused. Blessed are we, the friend, the stranger, the lonely, the welcome, the hidden, the visible, the authentic. Blessed are we who rise in solidarity. Blessed are we who cannot rise. Blessed are we who do not. Blessed are we, the saints and the sinners, and those who do not believe in either saints or sin. Blessed are we, for this is our beloved community, and this is who we are. Please join me in a moment of silent meditation, reflection, or prayer.
Prayer for Travelers by Reverend Angela Herrera. This is a prayer for all the travelers, for the ones who start out in beauty, who fall from grace, who step gingerly, looking the way back. And for those who are born in the margins, who travel from one liminal space to another, crossing boundaries in search of center. This is a prayer for the ones whose births are a passing from darkness to darkness, who all their lives are drawn toward the light and keep moving, and for those whose journeys are a winding road that begins and ends in the same place. Though only when the journey is completed do they know where they are. For all the travelers, young and old, aching and joyful, weary and full of life, the ones who are here and the ones who are not here, the ones who are like you, and they're all like you, and the ones who are different, for in some ways, we each travel alone. This is a prayer for traveling mercies and sure-footedness and for clear vision, for bread, for your body and spirit, for water, for your safe travel, and for everyone you see along the way. Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing number 21, For the Beauty of the Earth.
Thank you.
As Unitarian Universalists, we talk a lot about welcome. We talk a lot about the range of beliefs that we can have. We talk a lot about our search for truth and meaning. And I want to mess that all up today, because I'm going to talk about being intolerant and inhospitable. Doesn't sound real promising in a month where the theme is hospitality, does it? But indulge me for a moment. Because this is one of the areas where, as an entire denomination, we're not comfortable. Because it involves drawing some lines that are very uneasy, very hard to draw. So we are Unitarian Universalists. If anyone here was looking for the Lutherans when you arrived, I'm sure you're really confused right now. But you may like the sermon, so hang around. As you use, we do all that talking about welcome, and we do welcome people. Radical welcome, radical hospitality are two of the things that I know at least I feel deeply about, and I've seen many of you feel the same way. We don't have some test of faith. You're a UU because you say you're a UU. You're a UU because you've walked in the door and said, I want to have a home here. We don't have a sacred book. You don't have to learn some kind of catechism. All physical bodies are indeed welcome here. And part of this sermon comes out of a discussion that UU ministers across the country have been having as the neo-Nazi movement has strengthened. What do you do when one of them walks in your door and says, I think I'm a Unitarian Universalist? Esther's got it dead on. No, they're not. No, they're not. But what do you do? Not some out here theological position. They've walked in your door with the swastika on their car, and they said, I'm here to explore my free search for truth and meaning. What do you do? And one of the male ministers took it further. He said, can I punch a Nazi? And that was all of our reaction. He said, no. They want me dead. Can I punch a Nazi? How far do I have to let them go under the guise of hospitality? And I really had to think about it, because you see, I was a nurse before I was a minister. And when I worked in ER, one of my least favorite patients that came in after a motorcycle accident came in with swastikas all over his arms, and his chest said, white power. And my Hebrew self and a Jewish doctor and three black nurses patched him up, held his hand when he got sick and scared as he was waking up, held his head when he told us, nobody's coming, I don't have anybody. And I came back down to visit him. And the last thing I did was show him my Star of David and say, maybe you ought to think about those tattoos, my brother. But I sure as heck didn't call him up after he went home, because there's hospitality and then there's insanity. So all people, all physical bodies are welcome. But the sticky part is that all ideas and their lived values are not. What does that mean in real terms? Because we're not talking theoretical anymore. We have Nazis in our streets. What does this look like? In 1945, there was a philosopher named Karl Popper, and he defined something he called the paradox of tolerance. And he wrote this in a scholarly work called The Open Society and Its Enemies, Volume 1. I never was brave enough to ask how many volumes actually went with that whole set, and I don't think I want to know. But he said this. He said, less well known is the paradox of tolerance. Unlimited tolerance must lead to the disappearance of tolerance. If we extend unlimited tolerance even to those who are intolerant, if we are not prepared to defend a tolerant society against the onslaught of the intolerant, then the tolerant will be destroyed and tolerance with them. He goes on to say, in this formulation, I do not imply, for instance, that we should always suppress the utterance of intolerant philosophy. As long as we can counter them by rational argument and keep them in check by public opinion, suppression would be unwise. So as long as hatred and intolerance pop up and a normalized community says, oh no, not here, it will stay in check. You're safe letting them speak. But we should claim the right to suppress them if necessary, even by force, for it may easily turn out that they are not prepared to meet us on the level of rational argument, but begin by denouncing all argument, perhaps as fake news. They may forbid their followers to listen to rational argument because it is deceptive. They may teach them to answer arguments by the use of fist or pistol or semi-automatic weapon. We should therefore claim in the name of tolerance the right not to tolerate the intolerant. Let's hear that last sentence again. We should therefore claim in the name of tolerance the right not to tolerate the intolerant. Boiled down, if you want to have a tolerant society, that's the one thing you can't allow. It's a paradox. Tolerate everyone else. Tolerate even intolerance as absolutely far as you can. So if someone is intolerant, someone can be racist. They can be prejudiced. They can be politically disingenuous and misleading. The point where you become intolerant yourself is the point where they will not allow pushback, where they will not allow any dialogue, where they will not allow any interaction, where any attempt to be rational is met with your lying rather than any effort, where they respond by violence to any attempts to have a discussion.
I'm sorry I'm disrupting you.
You're fine.
With what's happening in some of the college campuses right now, where they're having the Nazi speakers come in, and there's all that hullabaloo about it, that would the answer be to let them come, but insist on a polylogue afterward?
Quite possibly. That would be very reasonable. What he's calling for is be reasonable, as long as you can possibly be reasonable. But if you cannot, if they're saying to you, we are so intolerant, we will not be reasonable, then it is on you to pay attention. And it took people, and by people I mean philosophy students, it took them quite a few years to mull this over. This is a big idea. It's a scary idea in some ways because people taking it wrong go after each other. They use it as an excuse not to have reasoned dialogue. He's not saying don't disagree. But in 1971, a philosopher named John Rawls was ready to argue a bit. He wrote a work called A Theory of Justice. And Rawls said, well, if you want to call yourself a just society, you have to tolerate the intolerant. Otherwise, the society itself would be intolerant and therefore not just. Another paradox. But here's the big however. However, Rawls goes on to agree with Popper by saying that such a just society, a perfectly just society, a perfectly tolerant society will be inevitably destroyed by the intolerance it tolerates. These start to make your brain bend in the middle as you try to work your way through these lines of reasoning. So Rawls said that a mostly just society, a society of rational people, has the right to self-preservation, and that right supersedes the need to be tolerant to a fault. So he's going for, don't be perfectly just. Refuse to tolerate the intolerant for the preservation of a mostly just society. Bend a little. And that's a good piece because it allows us to work together over political divide. You can be Republican, you can be Democratic, you can be Libertarian, and you can still find ways to say we're not going for perfection here. We just want to talk to each other and not insist on violence to suppress the other side. Michael Walzer in 97 looked at it from a different angle. He started looking at minority religious groups. And he said, all of the minority groups are intolerant to an extent, but in a world that's mostly tolerant, they soften their stance. They learn to either be tolerant or at least to behave as if they possessed this virtue. So small groups, if they feel that you're tolerant of them, will ease up a little on the folks they are intolerant of. It's better for everyone that way. The whole issue of the tolerance paradox comes up for us quite often. If we are indeed here to transform the world, then we owe it to the world not to allow ourselves to be destroyed. But in order not to be destroyed, we cannot tolerate ideas that would cause our destruction. A few years ago, there was an article in UU World called All Are Welcome to a Point. Darcy Baxter wrote it, and she tells this story. Come, come, whoever you are, you're welcome here. On the morning of Sunday, July 20th, 2014, the Reverend Deanna Van Diver, D. Van Diver, and Kimberly Quinn Johnson began worship at First UU Church of New Orleans with the congregation's customary greeting, come, come, whoever you are. Similar words greeted worshipers at many of our congregations that day. But despite how often we say something like, all are welcome, as the events in New Orleans that morning proved, it is not true. All are not welcome, and that is absolutely okay. In the middle of a moment of quiet prayer and meditation, Deanna Waller, a member of the anti-abortion group Operation Save America, stood up in their church and began hurling verbal assaults at the congregation. Others of her group joined her, yelling that the church was not a true faith, trying to get a whole group of UUs to repent and be saved. You can imagine how well this went over in a UU group. And Dee Van Diver, who's the executive director for the Center for Ethical Living and Social Justice Renewal, asked Waller and her fellow group members to leave the sanctuary if they couldn't participate respectfully. And Waller turned around and said, "But you said all are welcome here. You said all are welcome." And they got louder and louder. And Van Diver said, "You are welcome here. If you can worship with us respectfully, you are welcome here. No matter what you believe. If you cannot be respectful, you are respectfully invited outside the threshold of the sanctuary. The desire for inclusion does not provide the right to destroy a group, and Van Diver handled the situation perfectly. The person of each of the group yelling, their persons were welcome to be present. They were welcome to worship and to sing. They would have been welcome to attend classes, to go to events. But their intolerance, their demands that others must think like them, or they would force everyone else to be able to do nothing, were not only not welcome, but they were rejected and refused. We are a faith of deeds and not creeds, and what this means is direct. We expect you to decide what you believe today and to live in accordance with that. We have 7 principles that we affirm. And if your beliefs, and here's the important bit, the way you express them in the world, because none of us know what you think. We have no way of knowing that. We know what you say and what you do. If what you say and what you do in the world align with our 7 principles in general, you will do well in a UU church. If they align pretty well, you will do well in a UU church. You will never have a problem. You will never be told you are not welcome. If your lived faith is filled with hatred, if it is intolerant, if it violates our principles, it will not be welcome under the umbrella of Unitarian Universalism. And more specifically, you are not welcome to live out hatred, intolerance among us. Oscar Wilde says that every saint has a past and every sinner has a future, and this is true. No one is perfect. We don't hold to any one political ideology. You can be an amazing, some of the dearest, finest Unitarian Universalists I know are Trump supporter Republicans. I don't ask how they work it out. But the way they live their lives are the finest examples of our values. It's apparent you can do it. I don't know what they believe. I'm a libertarian. I manage. It's not about politics. All people, regardless of the thoughts in their heads, are welcome to come in. My father used to say, it is possible to be so open-minded that all of your brains fall out. And I think as I've aged, I have come to agree with the man. The best metaphor I can find is to ask those of you who've been around children to think about the difference between raising your first child or being around the first child you were ever around and being around other children later. So for those of you who are parents, when you had your first child, did you sterilize everything? You wiped off the boiling water for the pacifier, boiling water for the bottles. A friend of mine cried because her son ate a grape off the floor. She thought she'd killed him for sure. The kid was going to die of some kind of cooties if you turned your back. By the second and third and sixth child, you've changed a little. And while you wouldn't feed them out of the cat's bowl, well, at least he's busy. You catch yourself taking the pacifier and going like this and popping it back in. It's not the end of the world. You have figured out that dance between perfection and living in the world. Sure, you could be perfect. You just have to sacrifice everything else. Perfection in ideology is the same, and that's what a lot of this is about. We can't sacrifice everything else that we hold dear on the altar of fairness and tolerance. It is not reasonable to say if a group of neo-Nazis show up at our door that we need to give them pulpit space. We cannot be so open-minded that our brains fall out. We cannot welcome lived values that are the exact opposite of our principles. The paradox of tolerance is narrow. And we thread it together for all the saints and all the sinners and everyone in between who need us to exist every day. But in order to create a spiritual home of love and acceptance, to work at healing the world and transforming the pain of the broken into a chance at life, the only thing we cannot do is to accept those who say, don't accept others. This month's theme is hospitality, and we want to be hospitable. We want to love the hell out of the world. We want to tolerate everything we possibly can. We want to engage in rational dialogue all the way up until there is absolutely no way to do that. And when there is nowhere else to go, we want to be able to open the door boldly and say, if you cannot be respectful, you are respectfully invited outside the door of this sanctuary. Because we're trying to get it right. And we're going to foul it up. But we want to be able to keep trying. So think about it. Amen.
Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, number 108, My Life Flows On in Endless Song.
May we be held in the love and support of community as we search for truth and meaning, peace, and may it be so.
I didn't mean it.